When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.
This show is brought to you by The Makery, the podcast network for makers.
Guys, it's Knife Talk, baby. The summer sessions. The summer sessions are here. I'm Jeff Fader, Fader Knives. I'm here with Mareko Momasi, Momasi Fire Arts. And Craig Lockwood is en route to somewhere beautiful. He's with his family. He's taking the time off. We're starting to refer to these as the summer sessions because you're getting the round robin. And Mareko and I are finally back from Europe. He's back from his big trip. I'm back from Barcelona. And we're here for Knife Talk, the summer sessions. Mareko, how the hell are you?
We're here. We're doing it. It's good. I'm glad to be back. I feel bad that the last time we talked, there were some issues with the Wi-Fi, but it was what it was, and we're here again. And thank you, everybody, for tuning in. How's the jet lag treating you, Jeff? When did you get back?
Terribly. I got back. Today is Thursday. I got back Monday night, and I went right back to the shop Tuesday morning.
Yep.
And I am not good with jet lag at all. Actually, okay. When I was in Barcelona, I was with Tomer Bodner, Florentine Kitchen Knives. P.S. All of our, I would say more than 3/4 of the people taking the workshop at Florentine Kitchen Knives were Knife Talk listeners. So shout out to Eric and Alexander and Max and Nico and Rupert and there's too many to even remember. Paul from the UK was a pile of Knife Talk guys, which was awesome all over Europe.
Nice.
Yeah, when I fly in, the move is now I take the overnight. And so I leave during the day, and then I arrive like 6 o'clock in the morning. I go right to Tomer said to me, don't stay up and watch a movie. Don't have dinner. Don't do any of that. Just go right to sleep. So I had a couple of Benadryls, went right to sleep, and then woke up, got to the thing. And what he does is we go straight direct to the shop, and then he runs me ragged on Friday, which is perfect. And then he also takes me out for an incredible dinner and we have a pile to drink. And for some reason, ladies and gentlemen, alcohol is like the best thing for jet lag. I might be wrong.
Is it?
But we had a bottle of natural wine and boy, I said, it set me straight. But number one is a jet lag fucked me up. I mean, the older I get, the worse it is. But I'm like, the whole time I was there, my fucking head was swimming in like a cloud. So, but before we get into Barcelona, you've been gone for like a month. Is
almost.
That right?
It's been 3 weeks.
3 weeks.
3 weeks is a big trip.
Big trip. Big trip with you and your family. The last time we spoke, I want to get all about it. You were at Fingal Ferguson's. You were having a blast with him and his family. You and your family are having a great time. It looked amazing. I mean, it seems like, ain't no better host than Fingal Ferguson.
No. He's pretty damn good.
Tell me all about Fingal and what you guys did together and then into the West Cork hammering. That looked amazing. Let's hear all about it.
Yeah. So I think last we talked, we were leading up to the West Cork hammering.
Right.
And it was great. We had a bunch of killer guys there. We had Eric Gullickson, Hugo Bryan. We had Jason Boris, Lou G. We had Mark Keeling, who is fucking phenomenal. This guy, so he was our incredible host for the Hammerin.
Right.
He's possibly one of the most talented. I think he's probably the most talented blacksmith I've ever met. Wow. And he's probably, if not the most talented, one of the most talented in Ireland. And he was very kind and opened up his shop. And it's, you know, stuff like that can be tricky sometimes,
right,
especially if it's a person that works by themselves. They have a lot of specialized equipment. You know, people aren't there all the time. They have their ways, right? But, dude, he was a mensch. He was very accommodating and letting all these strangers into his shop. And he was killer.
Did he know anybody? Did he know all those guys?
He knew Fingal.
Whoa.
So Fingal was really kind of rolling the dice to see if he ever got a chance to come back to Mark Keeling's shop or not. Because even I think some of the makers that were there, Fingal hadn't actually met before. I think. And a few of them haven't even met each other.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so it was cool. But everybody had a great time. Oscar from Damasteel was there. We put his ass to work, and he forged a blade. Actually, that was kind of his request. But he was at Blade Show. He told me, he's like, I have a secret mission. I want to forge a blade. I've never forged a blade. I'm like, fuck yeah, let's do it. So we got him under the steel, or under on an anvil with a hammer, and he did some blade forging out of some of the Apex Ultra that Tobias Hangler brought, because Tobias Hangler was there. Huh. Sam Dunn was there, Sam Gleason. A lot of great people were there hanging out, and we had a really good time. Ate tons of good food. Like you said, Fingal was a phenomenal fucking host. Dude took serious care of us all. And it was really like the hammering portion was one day, but we kind of hung out like, and that was a Saturday. So we hung out Friday evening. We did our thing all day Saturday, went out to dinner Saturday evening, and then made our way towards Fingal's essentially area of Ireland, because where Mark Keeling's shop is almost an hour away from Fingal.
Okay.
And so we made our way a little closer to Fingal's. Next day on Sunday, we did like a tour of Fingal's after breakfast, and cruised around kind of that West Cork area and saw some cool shit and jumped into the ice cold ocean. And
wow.
We had a really good time. It was super fun.
I have a question about the hammering.
Let's hear it.
Do you feel as though, I remember a couple months ago you asked me if there's anything you need to know about teaching or being in Europe and stuff like that. It was something vague of like, I felt like you were like looking for some sort of something. Do you feel like what did you take away from being around guys, number one, you never met, and number one, culturally different from you? What did you take away from that hammering?
Ireland was pretty easy to transition to, especially since everybody spoke English. And thankfully, Tobias from Austria speaks probably better English, and Oscar as well from Sweden, both probably speak better English than I do. So I think the language barrier was probably, when I get to talking about Italy, was potentially one of the biggest issues. But otherwise, doing a little work to convert from like the imperial system, inches, to metric, I probably should have done beforehand, and I just didn't really think about it. And it wasn't such a big deal for the hammering, but for the class in Italy, there was a lot, like many, many times where I'm like, hold on a second, let me figure out what that is in millimeters.
I guess I mean like you're with guys who are, they work differently than you. It's not about the language or anything like that, but I mean, they work differently than you. And I was wondering if you kind of picked anything up from these Irish guys that you probably wouldn't have, you know, just the way they work or the way that you know, philosophy or anything.
Yeah, I think it was cool hanging around, especially with Tobias, because he is a metallurgist by trade. That's right. What he went to school for. And he had some good insight that helped with the forging, as well as the forging of the Apex that he brought, Apex Ultra clad material. And I think I felt a very strong sense of responsibility out of respect to Mark Keeling and his space and him opening it up to us, and just wanting to help take care of his tooling. Very few of the people there actually had experience under a power hammer. So a few guys had like maybe a tiny bit, and then there are others who had basically nothing. Right. And so I was kind of hovering and hanging out basically the whole time. I think I stepped away from the forge for about a total of maybe 40 minutes the whole day we were there, just making sure that people are like paying attention. And, you know, we had like six fucking guys running back and forth between one forge, or sorry, two forges, two power hammers, two anvils and hammers. And, and the a couple of the Blenheim guys were there. James and John were there. And so they were also working with Mark doing some, like he had a motor driven screw press. And that thing was fucking wild. I'm trying to think. I think they made some posts over on their Instagram showing the screw press being used to do some forging. And they brought over some dies sets that they made for their, I think, for their press. And some of the, like, the quote-unquote monolith or all-steel blades that they forge. And it was really cool. It was a lot of fun. And I think the conversation outside, I think, outside of the actual forging, like the conversation inside forging was cool, but most of the stuff I was very familiar with. But the conversation, getting to know people better outside of the forging activity was actually really cool. A lot of fun. And yeah, it's learning people's differences, but also the similarities and understanding that, you know, we do really, truly live in a large but also small world. And we aren't, even though we're half a world apart, we're not really too different from each other. I think that's one of the biggest problems we have in this world right now is everybody, it sees everybody else as others rather than realizing, like, we're all fucking human and we're all struggling in our own ways.
How did you think, I mean, I know some of the guys who are at the Hammer and were traditionally, you know, stock removal guys. I mean, what was their takeaway from seeing all the forging?
I think, well, and everybody got their hands on steel and did forging, everybody. And I think they realized like how much more accessible it was. And honestly, like, we're all forging Damasteel, which because of its high chromium, especially the high chromium content in the Damasteel, and I believe the molybdenum also helps kind of slow, or not helps, but really slows down the material and the way the, how it flows at forging temperatures. It's probably one of more challenging steels to forge. And a lot of these guys will go back to, they'll probably do some stainless, but they'll probably also do some carbon steel. And when they do carbon steel, they're going to just be like, holy fuck, this is like forging butter compared to the stainless.
But if they just forge regular mild steel, that's the same. I mean, you're just like the same, like, oh my God, carbon steel sucks. This mild steel is the greatest.
Oh yeah. Yeah, sure. I guess of course it depends on the type of carbon, like between 52 and 100 and Crew Forge V, which are really tough. And even O1 versus forging just like a straightforward 10 series, like 1080, 1075, 1084, carbon steels, or even 80 CRV2 is pretty forging friendly. I think they had a great time. Sam Dunn forged like a full integral knife that he just sent a video. We have like a West Core Cameron thread going on WhatsApp, and he sent a video of his heat treating of it. And it's exciting. It's cool to see like what people are, how people are using the material and forging it. And there were no failures. Shocked.
Why are you so shocked?
I'm shocked because when I first started forging Damasteel, I ruined like $3,000 worth of material trying to figure out the forging.
I remember you,
temperatures you told and me the about forging that, progression. And getting a feel for how the material moves because of the high alloy content in the steel, it just moves way slower and also heats up way slower. And so those add to the challenge of working with it. It was great. I'm glad there were no failures. And thankfully we had our guy, Brian House. Fingal worked with Brian House to get one of the Apollo forges over, and we were working out of the Apollo forge for most of the day, and then Mark turned on his second forge, and we just dialed it back so we were working at a proper temperature, and it really helped to like get the job done and make sure that everybody's working kind of like at the right temperatures, because you have a very narrow range that you can forge the material in. it's really important that you don't go above that temperature, because you'll start, the material will start to deteriorate and melt along grain boundaries and start to basically fall apart like kinetic sand, which sucks.
If I wanted to make sure I didn't have any failures in my Damasteel, I would be using an Even Heat. Knife Talk Summer Sessions are sponsored by Even Heat, manufacturers of the finest heat treat ovens available. To get your next oven, go to evenheat-chillin.com, check out what they got going on. If you're using that Damasteel and you want to make sure you don't fuck it up, use that Even Heat. You know what I'm saying? All right, evenheat-chillin.com.
Honestly, that is a very fair point, though. It can be done out of the heat treating kiln, especially out of an Even Heat. And in industry, that's usually what they're using as their heat source. I believe Damasteel even is using a kiln for heating their billets before they forge them and roll them out and flatten them and all that stuff.
Makes sense. Yeah.
It just uses a lot of electrical energy.
Right.
And that's the beauty of using a forge. But with a forge, you want to have like at least a thermocouple in there to help you keep track of what the temperature is. Because, if you go too hot, you're gonna fuck yourself real fast.
You know who uses our good friend Bob Rankin was one of the first guys I knew who created a forge with a PID or on there, or a thermal coupler, and that's how he makes his steel. And that, I mean, between you, me, and the listeners, that's the future. You know, like really good forges with temperature control. You know, you got something going on. But that's, that's neither here nor there. I'm sure that, I know that a number of companies are working on it. That's the golden ticket, guys.
It was good to see Bob at Blaze Show, by the way.
It was great to see Bob. Yeah, it was great to see Bob. Bob Rankin is my guy, and he is great to see Bob. It's always great to see Bob.
Yeah.
So that sounds like a great trip, and then you meandered your way around. You meandered your way, and then you ended up in Italy.
Yeah.
Let's hear about that.
Yeah, so we got to Italy. Excuse me. So basically, the second to last weekend in June, we did the Hammerin in Ireland. And then after the Hammerin, drove up, made our way around to Dublin, and flew over to Italy. And then a couple days later, I was doing the class in Italy. That kind of started Friday evening. I was at Oliver Goldschmidt was, again, another incredible host. Hosted me and the family there at his place. He's got three different buildings. He's got two big warehouses and then his house on the property where he's at. And that was tricky, or not tricky. It was cool. It was a really great class. It was great to spend more like quality time with guys like Alfredo Facipieri, and to also just eat so much delicious food. And but we had people in the class from all over the fucking place, which is probably what you experienced when you did your class. But we had people from Bulgaria and a guy from England, and we had another guy who's originally from Poland but is living in northern Italy. We had just people from all over. I think 7 or 8 different countries in total represented at the Hammerin, which I thought, we had another gentleman from Germany. I'm sorry, I'm blanking on people.
Don't worry about
right
it.
Now.
Don't
but
worry
anyways,
about
it. It was really cool. It was a fun class. But again, like I said earlier, I wish I had done some conversion of some of the materials. The dimensions, especially because I was constantly the first day was chef's knife design, and so there was a lot of talk about like spine thickness and heel height and length of the blade and cross-sectional geometry of blades and the various kinds of compound grinds versus convex grinds and hollow grinds and all this kind of stuff. And
driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.
Save big on all your back-to-school needs. All in the Kroger app.
Get 3 for $10 on select Kellogg's Giant Size Cereal with your card. Then get tender USDA Choice Boneless Beef Chuck Roast for $4.99 a pound with your card and a digital coupon.
Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
But otherwise, it was really great. It was a lot of fun. We had Jeroen Nippenberg. He was down from Denmark. The Netherlands. He was there from the fucking Netherlands. So he made a trip. It was cool. I don't know.
Hey, you got to be shout out to the Netherlands. They just got their asses whipped by England.
Football?
Dude, did you watch any football while you were there? Soccer?
No.
Were in? Oh, my God. Every night, Tomer and I are watching soccer. I watch so much goddamn soccer coming out of my head.
I don't give a shit about sports.
Well, you know, but back to, you know, you're saying, back to what you were saying in regards to so many people.
Yeah.
What's amazing is how inexpensive it is to fly if you're in Europe. That's the takeaway I got. It's so, you know, going to, in the United States, flying even, you know, the short distances is not cheap. It's very expensive flying in the United States.
Yes.
But flying in and out of Europe, it's almost as cheap as like a bus ticket. You know, so a lot of these guys, for a weekend opportunity, it's super duper easy. Like one guy was saying,
caveats though, just to be clear.
Like what?
Like, so a lot, especially for us when we were traveling, we flew some airline called Easy Air and another one called Ryanair.
Yeah, they're fly. Oh, Ryan sucks. I know Ryan, all about Ryanair.
So
level
so
all those fucking fleet.
The
bags.
Ryanair flight was delayed by like 4 hours.
Wow.
And they gave us, I think, the equivalent of €4 each as a sorry, go get yourself something to eat or a Coke. Like, a bottle of Coca-Cola was like $4 or €4 there.
In Italy, was that expensive?
It was, yeah.
Was it more expensive than when you were at home? Would you be
sorry,
at home?
That was, I think that was in Paris. I can't remember.
Paris is expensive. France is expensive. But
yeah.
Was Italy as expensive? Like, if you were to look at...
For me,
like, the,
yeah, grocery-wise, I think it was a straight-across comparison, cost-wise. If not possibly just a little bit more.
I got a funny airline story in regards to the airlines getting mad.
Okay, let me tie mine up then. So, Ryanair, first off, was 3 hours delayed. Or, sorry, 4 hours delay. Then, to make sure they weren't delayed even longer, they started letting people quote-unquote board. But what they actually did was they were letting people go through into a corridor that led to where the fucking plane was. But then they wouldn't let us get on the plane. So they at least were boarding us by a certain time. So then we stood around for like 50 fucking minutes in this hallway that had no airflow, and everybody stank and heat and hot breath and everything coming off of them. And I got my 7-year-old kid, and it's fucking 2:00 in the morning.
Oh, God.
And
that sounds terrible.
That was a pain in the ass. And then coming back, the same fuck. We were delayed by much less. I think we were delayed by like an hour. But they did the same fucking thing where they're like, all right, we're going to start boarding. And you know, started checking people's tickets, and people were walking down the jetway or whatever, the stairway to get to the plane. But then again, we were stopped and held in the hallway for like half an hour, 40 minutes before they actually let us get to the fucking plane. And I was just like, what the fuck is this?
Dude,
this is some bullshit, right?
I'll tell
here.
You what happened on the way back. We finally got on the plane to go back to New York. And the airline pilot, who is obviously American from American Airlines, says, I have some bad news. The gas situation in Barcelona is not good. And he says, first thing I want to say is this is not American Airlines' fault. He didn't even tell us what the problem was. He says there are 3 gas trucks that are supplying the planes. And he's telling us this like we're his friend. He saw over the speaker. There's 3 gas trucks that's supplying all the airplanes, and one of them's broken down, and it looks like the next one's going to be broken down. And we were supposed to get our gas, but the truck only had half the gas. So he's going to go back to get more gas to fill us up. And then he says, folks, this has nothing to do with American Airlines. I'm going to write a full report. And you could hear how just like pissed off the pilot was at the at the state of the bar. He kept on saying the airport here at Barcelona, I'm writing up a report. This is unacceptable. And it was madness, but it was like, I know your feeling. I got your feelings.
That's funny.
It sucked. But no one was mad because the airline pilot was so pissed off that we were all like, all right, well, I mean, he doesn't have to. I mean, yeah, all right. I mean, you know, don't relax, Captain. You know, just don't have a fucking heart attack while you're up in the air.
They're making me look like an asshole.
That's what he was. I mean, he was talking to us like, can you believe this these motherfuckers? I mean, he was on the phone. I mean, I was waiting for him to say, this is some bullshit. Like, that would have been awesome. But he was pissed. He was so pissed. So
our flight from Pisa, our pilot kind of did the same thing. He was basically talking passive aggressively, shitting on the traffic control in London. It wasn't Heathrow; it was a different airline or airport, a little bit south. But anyways, he's like, "I apologize on behalf of such and such airport for their poor management of traffic."
That should be a whole
just beating each other's brakes off. I was like,
"That
wow,
should be like okay. a whole like." Reel of like being shitty towards the airports that the pilot, you know, shitty pilots being shitty, pilots roasting the airports. I want to hear like a whole thing about the pilots roasting airports to the passengers. That's hilarious. You know what I would do if I was to grind my gears, if I was one of those pilots and I was all fucking all abrasive? I'd use combat abrasives. I go to combatabrasives.com, put in the promo code KnifeTalk15 for 15% off. If you're going to get abrasive like some of them pilots, use the best. Use combat abrasives and use that promo code KnifeTalk15 for 15% off all your abrasives.
What do you take? You take like a 36 grit and start chasing down the air traffic.
Oh, God.
Start whipping them with
there.
It.
They get so pissed off. But you know what? The travel still, you know, like it is amazing. And that's the best part about doing these things in Europe is people are very quick. I mean, look, Craig is on the fucking, he's on an airplane every weekend. Fucking guy is like, it's like he's got like, you know, he's on a different, and he was on, last time I was on with him, he said, he's flying all the time. I said, do you get like frequent flyer mileage? He goes, no, these airlines are such bullshit airlines. I mean, we're lucky if we just get to the right place on time. I have a suggestion. Next time you do this, because I know you're going to get invited back, you got to get a dude who's just there with a calculator, who's just converting inches to centimeters.
I should have done
Don't
that.
Do it yourself. You got to get a guy.
And I just point to him every time. And that is...
And you turn to it, and it's going to be Alfredo. You're going to get Alfredo. Alfredo! Alfredo! my friend, Alfredo, convert 3/16. And then he's like, oh, 3/16, 5 millimeters. And then you got to get a dude. You got to appoint...
That's like 2.5.
You have to appoint a dude in the class to be your converter.
Oh, wait, you said 5/16?
I was fooling around. I was just coming 3/16. I was coming up with shit. I don't know. I don't give a fuck.
I think you said 5.5.
I
was doing 3.5.
Anyway,
I will say Alfredo made some bolognese.
How was it?
It was fucking awesome.
It was good. What was the best thing you ate in Italy?
Oh, my God. I don't know. It was all so good. But just also Ireland. The food in Ireland was fucking awesome, too. I think that to me... and these guys might hate it, but these, guys, but to me, I'm not really interested in delineating between Ireland being better than Italy or vice
of
versa.
Of course,
I think I ate great food across the board in both places. I'm trying to think of the most unusual thing that I ate. I had blood pudding for the first time.
How was it?
It was awesome.
It was?
I loved it.
Was it grainy?
Yeah, it was fucking awesome. It was.
Did it
so
taste
good.
Like eating pennies?
No.
Okay. Not like
it was
properly
seasoned. No.
What did it taste like?
I don't know. It just tasted like a good sausage.
Right, there you go. Have mercy. Ayo.
Ayo.
There you go. So that sounds, I mean, I will say that the food in Europe, I hate to say it, but I have to say it, there is so fewer preservatives in it that I think that
yes.
over in Europe, I think everyone's eating better. I honestly do. Because in Spain, there's no nitrates in anything. There's no preservatives. All the wine is natural wine. There's no sulfites. Everything is like fresh, and there's no bullshit in it. There's no GMOs. You don't feel everything. Does nothing tastes artificial.
Well, I think a lot of there's been a lot of, I guess, for lack of a better word, legislation around making sure there isn't a bunch of bullshit in their food. Where I guess we are, we love our convenience.
And we love our bullshit
in the United States.
I mean, everything tastes. I mean, when I went to Spain, everything I ate tasted delicious. But there was like this very much. Everything seemed, even the just the straight ingredients, everything just seemed a little bit more delicious. But the thing is you can't bring it back to the United States, any of that shit, because they don't, there's no the preservatives in it that makes it safe for the FDA. I don't know what the fuck's going on, but you can't bring anything over back.
You know what I brought
Go
back?
Ahead.
A pine cone from a sequoia tree. In a garden at a castle in Ireland.
Are you going to plant the seed and like have some sort of, you know...
We're going to see what we can do.
Oh, my God. Would that be unbelievable if that was like the new pestilence? Some pine tree you brought over from...
Dude, there's already fucking...
you brought over some fucking pine tree pestilence. Oh, we have this new species, this invasive species of Irish pine trees, and it's invading the West Coast. We don't know where it came from. But we heard this podcast called Knife Talk, and this dork brought a pine cone over from Fingal Ferguson's house, and now we have the invasive Fingal Ferguson pine tree dilemma.
Yeah. This is at Burr Castle in Ireland. And it was, they had this massive garden, or actually a couple massive gardens, and these people were the earls of wherever the fuck they were at. And they did a lot of traveling, right. And they would bring garden or plants back. And one of them was a sequoia, from California. And, it was 2 years ago, I did a road trip with the family through California and saw the sequoias and they were stunning. And then I was walking through this garden. I was like, what the fuck is that, a sequoia? And I walked up to it. It's got a label on it. And it sure was.
Wow.
It was exactly that. And there were pine cones on the ground and I picked one up.
Oh, so
because in the
back.
National parks, you're not supposed to be, you're not supposed to be taking stuff out of the national parks. Because the forests there, you know, there's just issues of them repopulating themselves.
Right.
So I didn't fuck with anything there, but I brought one back from Ireland. So we'll see if we can get a seed going.
Oh, jeez. Look at you.
That'd be fucking
That's
cool.
Awesome. What did I bring back? Who gives a shit. So the trip to Italy was good. You get any work done or? Oh, I know. Wait.
Yeah.
Back
so
to, at some point we got to go
yeah,
back.
Go ahead.
We got to go back. At some point, I want to talk. I want you to. We'll talk about it. We'll go back to Ireland in a little bit. But so, did you get any work done? Did you do any physical work in Italy or work with Oliver or anything?
I just ate a lot of food.
Oh, nice.
There
you go.
No, with Oliver, I did some foraging with some RLW-34, to show him my process for foraging. An integral, the way I, because he forges integrals, but I think as foragers, we're always interested to see how other people work. Excuse me. And so I did that in the RLW-34, which was challenging because it is a high carbon stainless, performance stainless with a high chromium content. So the same issue that you have with Damas steel, whose steel powder, essentially a part of the chemistry is RLW-34. It moves very slowly and it turns like, even though it looks plenty hot, it ting-tings. It sounds like it's fucking rock hard and way too cold to be forging. But forged one of those out, showed my forging progression as well as did some of my, like I do my math to figure out how much material you need to forge a blade. And then I used that. To do it, and unfortunately, it got fucked up because I isolated too much material for the tang, or the bolster and the tang. So I ended up like drawing out the tang, and there's just weight. There was like 5 cubic centimeters extra material out there that definitely could have been out on the blade.
Right.
So instead of it being like an 8 1/4 inch long blade, it was like a 7.5 or something
All
like
right.
that, 7 inch knife. So it's fine. But I was just like, the math fucking works. I just you still have to forge it properly, though, to help, like, delineate where that material actually goes. So I think I think what I need to do is to kind of update the way I do the math to be a bit more accurate to how those volumes are represented in the finished piece rather than how I kind of draw them up right now. But other than that, like, we just cruised. He had a really sweet dog named Leia, and she's a truffle hunting dog. We did some truffle hunting, and around where Oliver lives, they have black truffles. Whoa. And we pulled a fucking monster.
Get out of here.
Yeah. It was probably about the volume of like two or three golf balls.
Jesus, those are like expensive too, right?
Well, I think for the black truffles, I think for like 100 grams is like maybe $150 or something like that. They're not as highly valued as
the white truffles.
And there are a few different varieties of both style. He's got a couple of different styles of the black that grow near his place. But he's got like his parents just live up the hill a little further from him. So he's got a walking trail between the houses. And sure as shit, they're fucking truffles along the walking trail between his house and his parents' house.
And they're underground, right?
Yeah, well, some of them, I guess the black truffle, the white truffles sometimes can be as far as like almost a meter deep, which is like around 3 feet,
wow.
roughly. But the black truffles can be deep, but sometimes they're often close to the surface. And his wife, actually, the day before was with the dog and the kids while Oliver and I were running around doing something. And they're by their front gate, but like the entrance to their property. And there was a truffle like half sticking out of the ground.
Oh, so weird.
Yeah.
Did you eat any of them?
Yeah. We made pasta with them.
How'd they taste?
Or we didn't make the pasta. We just made like a sauce and then added the pasta. It was great. It was super delicious.
Louise.
Mellow. The black truffles are a lot more mellow than the white, which I'm actually all right with. Sometimes the white truffles feel like they're just like
intense.
So fucking, intense, pungent, like a kick in the face, and you're not really getting anything else, and it's a lot. So I like the mellow quality of the black truffles. Wow.
And you don't have to do anything to them? You just shave them, eat them raw, or is it easy cooking them up?
Yeah, no, we just cleaned them off and then grated them. Used like the fine grating and to make the sauce. And I learned the value of quality olive oil as well in Italy.
Oh, boy. Okay, go ahead.
Fuck. Yeah, it tastes so different. And the olive oil that Oliver has there it's made from the olives that are harvested on his property that he lives at. And so
this fucking Oliver Goldschmidt's living on the.
He's got the olive oil.
He got the truffles in the ground. What a fucking life this guy's got.
His wife's the green thumb, so they got a vegetable garden that she does like a CSA for, and obviously, of course, vegetables for themselves. And eating fresh, eating clean.
Jeez.
It was pretty sick.
And then he's a balloon driver. That's what they call it, right? Balloon pilot.
Yeah,
balloon pilot.
Pilot.
He's a balloon pilot.
Balloon driver. there wasn't a steering wheel on this one.
How was that?
It was pretty fucking
terrifying,
awesome. I thought I was going to be scared shitless, and I was totally fine. The kid was totally fine. My wife was a little anxious.
Yeah.
Which is weird because when she was young, she didn't used to have an issue with heights. Versus me, like, I'd get to a fourth or fifth story balcony, and if I look down, I start, like, shaking.
Oh, yeah. Your balls kind of, like, get tight, and you feel like this cramp
in your gooch.
Your taint all of a sudden wakes up. All of a sudden, now it has some sort of, like, some sort of, like, spidey sense in your taint, and you're like, where did this, all of a sudden, this muscle, now it does something, it's the fear muscle is fucking between my balls and my asshole. That's awesome. What? Right? Am I wrong? So, it like wakes up all of a sudden.
No, you're right. That's it.
Just spidey totally senses in your taint. Fuck that.
But what was great? It didn't bother me at all. I spent most of my time hanging my face over the edge, looking down. And we got up to like 1,200 feet, which isn't super
high,
but that's pretty fucking high. and Oliver has been flying, piloting the balloons for a long time. And, going up and then just kind of floating It's easy, actually. I mean, they're still technical, but at the same time, it's kind of boring. And so over the years, he's developed this move he likes to call tree surfing. So he'll dump air and he'll let it come back down to where you're like floating between the trees and along the treetops and stuff like that. And there was a couple oaks that we got pretty close to and I was able to grab leaves off of, but we were still like, you know, a couple hundred feet off the ground.
My God. How do you steer it?
You kind of don't.
So you don't end up so when you take off, you're not ending up in the same place you took off.
Definitely not. They have kind of relationships with some of the, some of the farmers along the valley that they do the hot air ballooning in. And so, the people know like hot air balloon's going to be coming down possibly at some point. And it just depends on the air, honestly, because, the way the winds are blowing early in the morning. And we were up at like the butt crack of dawn, like at 4 o'clock just before, before the sun rose, started rising, honestly, to get out there and to catch and you're basically kind of riding thermals as like the sun is rising and the temperature of the air starts to change. It causes the air to flow in different directions, but through the valleys, it has a pretty predictable movement. So it was pretty wild riding through there, but it was cool. It was a lot of fun. I liked it a lot. And we saw all kinds of wild animals. We saw white heron. We saw wild boar, like a troop of like probably like 10 boar, like maybe a couple adults and just a bunch of fucking babies trampling through the creek, and deer all over the place and pheasant. And
so I would imagine that like going up before the sun rises is part of the thing, because you need to have that like, you know, you need to have the sunrise while you're in the hot air balloon and have these kind of deep breaths and deep sighs. And you have these kind of fake, you know, nirvana moments where all of a sudden you have the meaning of life and sailing keeps
you
away.
Could be real.
You can have those fucking yacht rock songs going on and you're all fired up, but it sounds awesome.
I don't know that song.
You couldn't get me in one of them fucking buckets, that's for sure.
I will tell you, I was shocked at how stable it was. It felt as stable as like being on a ferry.
That's what she said.
All right, not like it.
Guys, listen, this balloon ride was like sponsored by Indasa USA, makers of Rhino-Wet. Rhino-Wet's the finest sandpaper you can get. And if you don't believe me, go get it over to Texas Ferry Supply and put in the promo code KnifeTalk10 for 10% off all your Rhino-Wet and anything else they have over at Texas Ferry Supply. So go ahead.
I'll tell you what.
I'm with you.
Oh, sorry. Did I cut you off? Oliver is a regular listener of the podcast, actually. He's one of the few knife maker friends of mine that listened to the show. And he started using Rhino-Wet, and he fucking loves it. He's like, you guys weren't full of shit. I was like, this is just some gimmick. They're just getting paid to do this shit. And he's like, Oliver, no, this is legit. And so, to me, Oliver is one of my favorite makers. He's super creative, and his work is fucking phenomenal.
I met him a number of years ago at Blade Show. Awesome guy. And I want to say something to you, Oliver. Oliver, we are rarely full of shit when it comes to our sponsors. Rarely full of shit. And, I mean, Indasa USA, I ain't get much better than that Rhino with. So if you're good enough for Oliver Goldschmidt, good enough for you. Well, that sounds like a fucking great trip. And you got to see the Leaning Tower of Pisa. I saw the pictures where you do that press, where we're doing the fake holding it up, and which was very cute. I know, I could see on your face. There was a lot of things.
I did not want to do that.
All right, but you've never been to Europe before. You've never been. I mean, what was your takeaway? What was your takeaway from Italy?
Yeah, it's true. No. Yeah, so I think Pisa was definitely the first thing that we saw, because we landed in Pisa. We got an Airbnb because we got in like 4 o'clock in the morning, like I said, we went to sleep for a few hours before getting up and cruising around, and we walked over to Pisa. Pisa was like 6 blocks, maybe half a mile away.
Right.
And I was shocked at the scale. You see pictures all the time. You're like, okay. And then you're standing next to the fucking thing. And it's fucking gigantic.
No, Why is it leaning?
I mean, it's not the Empire State Building.
Did he say?
But
that's the answer. Poor engineering.
Poor engineering. Yeah,
but it's shocking that it's still kind of standing
it.
Up,
that's,
isn't it?
It's fucking poor engineering. Well, they started to make like these weird adjustments as they continued to build it, even though it was already leaning.
Italians.
But they should have. What they should have done is driven down, because it's built on sand, and they should have driven down some pylons, which is fucking dumb because they do that for like basically everything else.
Can you go up into the tower?
You can 100%.
I don't think I want to be in it at all.
You don't want to be in it when it falls.
It's like
over.
I can imagine getting to the top. You're just like, yeah, this is fucked up.
Yeah. So, but in the last few years, they've done some work to like undercut underneath, like carefully, and get underneath and shore it up so it doesn't continue. Because it has continued to sink since it was originally built. God knows how long ago. But anyways. Yeah, and the Duomo, which was like the giant cathedral church right next to it, was also fucking massive and very cool. And I don't know, it was just like really cool to see this old stuff, basically. Actually, one of my favorite places in Italy was a town or village, or I don't know. Yeah, a town called Volterra. And they had like an ancient Roman amphitheater, which was built like, whatever, 1500 to 2000 years ago. But what's crazy is that city, the Romans took it over from an even older civilization or group of people called the Etruscans, which is where the Tuscany region of Italy gets its name, is from the Etruscans. They apparently were known for metalworking, and they were talented craftsmen and metalworkers. And I guess that part of Italy was just rich in metal ores, especially like copper and shit like that, to do metalwork. Through most of the Bronze Age until I think the Roman Iron Age hit. But anyways, but they were still doing like platters and plates and decorative stuff. And then the Romans were like, "Ah, fuck you."
That's what Caesar said.
And took them over.
Fuck you.
Yeah.
Hey, fuck you.
Fuck you.
Fafangulo.
But some of the ancient walls are still there and stuff. Yeah,
what did you think of Florence?
Exactly. Florence was cool. Definitely did not spend enough time there. I feel like to get a solid foundation and of experience there, I would prefer to have like 3 days there, and be staying probably like staying in an Airbnb there, just so you can just walk around, not have to worry about a car, because driving there. And the roads and the traffic is just like not interested, because there's so much mixture of the foot traffic and the car traffic.
My time in Florence was after high school. I've said this before, but the best painting job I ever had was the job I had picking up dog shit on the streets of New York. And I had so much money I didn't even know what to do with, so I went to Europe with my friends for my senior year at the end of the summer, and we ended up in Florence. We stayed with a friend of ours. And then we rented motor scooters, because that's what you do. And this is like, we're talking 1991. And 91, 92. 91, yeah. And we rented motor scooters and we went all over. I was fucking, I don't think I was 18. I think I was 17. We'd know, you know, they just let us rent these motor scooters. And we ended up staying, talking about it, it was B&B. We set it at a youth hostel. And it turns out that the youth hostel was Mussolini's country house. We had no idea. And it was at the base of the Fiesole, which is the mountain or the giant. I guess I don't know if it's a mountain, but it's a big roadway up to the hill. And you get to the top of the Fiesole and you see all of Florence.
Right.
And so one day we decided we were going to hike the Fiesole from fucking Mussolini's fucking country house. We're staying in this Mussolini's country house. And we go, which is, a fucking youth hostel. And we hike to the top. And that was a very highlight life story of my life, a moment in my life of having my own money to go to Europe. And then I ended up sleeping in, Mussolini's bed, and hiked up his fucking mountain and looked over at the Fiesole and the Florence. But I love Florence.
Right. Yeah, and it was, I guess, basically the food, there are some tourist traps, but for the most part, food is basically good anywhere you go.
Right.
And so it was the gelato and all that shit. And yeah, and the gelato, I actually, I only had gelato one time when I was in Italy. My kid had gelato like probably at least half a dozen
times.
Was
he too young to appreciate being in Europe, or did he kind of like get it that he was in a different country?
No, actually it was surprising. I thought he was going to be less interested, especially since, like, you know, he's a 7-year-old. He's going on 8. He'll be 8 in a month. But, you know, it's a lot of walking and hanging out with grown-ups. It would be different if there was another kid there. But he's just like fucking over it 5 minutes after we get out of the car, right? So we're like basically dragging his ass all over the place. But every once in a while, he's like, oh, wow, that's interesting. And just like seeing him connect with some of the different sculpture and architecture and artwork and stuff, I was like, oh, that was cool. But outside
travel
of that, he was just like,
is important. Dude, travel for kids is so important. You have no idea. It's going to be, he will remember that trip. And it'll have some sort of like imprint on him.
Oh, for sure.
You know, which is, that's the thing. It's like, that's how kids kind of realize that they don't live in, you know, it's not just their dumb town that they live in. There's like this whole weird world with people with different cultures and customs. It's the best.
Yeah.
My kid's real adventurous, and it's because we've been traveling with her since she was very young.
Yeah.
100%. So it was a great trip.
Yeah, it was good. It was very good, especially for, I mean, it helped for Victor in traveling that Fingal's got kids and a couple of them near Victor's age. And then Oliver also has a son that's Victor's age. And so that having that kid element while traveling with a kid made a huge difference, I think. Even though it was still challenging at moments, but we still made it. Yeah.
All right. There you go.
It was good.
So what did you work on with Fingal?
So with Fingal, he and I have been talking about doing a collaboration for a long time. And I don't know if this one's kind of more of an experimental project. But basically we made a Chinese cleaver.
Wow.
And we did a mixture, like we both took turns on grinding the blade. We worked together on heat treating the blade. We also took turns in like doing the handle sculpting, so that both of us were very hands-on in various aspects throughout the whole making of the thing. And I'm excited to, I don't know, get it. He's sending it my way. I have to do a little bit of geometry testing just to double check like the way we heat treated it is going to work for what I was hoping to to design it for. And then after that, then it's going to be on its way, and we'll, yeah, should be good.
Look at you. Look at you.
Sorry.
I did a collaboration too.
Yeah, let's hear it.
Got to Barcelona, had a great time with my friend. I tell you what, when I asked you in the beginning, about, was there any takeaways? Every time I'm with Tomer at Florentine Kitchen Knives, I always get inspired by like the business end. Like his business mind is very, very good. And I always, we talk business. Now I've been over there now 4 or 5 times, and we've spent long time together just talking about our businesses and employees and directions and marketing and the business end and investments and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And it's been helpful to me to like see and hear and talk to him. So in terms of, I get fired up every time I come back. And one of the cool things that's gone on at Florentine is he started this new business, and he brought this Japanese knife sharpener, and they started this business that's connected it's a separate business from Florentine, but they're in the same building and it's connected.
Right.
And it's called The Sharpening Shop. And this guy his name is Inori. Inori, he is unbelievable. He is this Japanese knife sharpener. He moved to Stockholm, Sweden, and then he kind of wanted to start it. He had a shop in Stockholm, and he kind of wanted to make changes, and then he moved down to Barcelona, and he started a partnership with Tomer. I learned so much from him just talking to him, and I really got a really great understanding of different things. But we set up for the class. We had Knife Talk guys. We had Full Blast guys. We had some of his customers. We had some of my customers. This was the first time we've had 5 Americans come to Barcelona to take the class, which is really amazing. And it's such a great opportunity to, like you were saying, you meet all these guys from all over the world. We had guys from Denmark and Germany and England, and from a guy from Madrid, and they were all over the place, and they all listened to the podcast, and they were all, my friend Daniel from South Carolina said to me, I made a joke about, you shouldn't, you know, I said on this goddamn podcast, something like, you're not allowed to have, you shouldn't have a beard and shorts. And he says, I was going to wear my shorts, but I thought you were going to give me a hard time. It was very funny. There was a lot of knife talk jokes. My friend Rupert was saying that he listened to the episode where we were talking about the gulag, and you were talking about Coca-Cola on your dick. And he says he couldn't stop laughing. And it was really kind of neat. And it was like talking to guys. What we focused on is really simplicity, and the simplicity of the grinding, and then a little bit on the heat treating and stuff like that. And it was a really great opportunity to kind of like meet with other people, and you know, Tomer and I working together, and it was amazing. And then I brought over some steel from Baker Forge, and he and I did a collaboration. Here's the funny part. So I show up there on the first day, and there he's doing some etching of some blades, and we were talking about, you know, finishing and stuff like that. And I said, you should do the coffee etch. He goes, well, how do you do the coffee etch? And I said, well, we got to go get some Nescafe Classico. He said, well, let's go across the street and see if we can get some. I'm like, I ain't going to find it here. It was across the – it was the only fucking coffee in the area. It's everybody has – if you live in Europe, if you live in Barcelona or you live in Europe, the Nescafe Classico is fucking everywhere.
Yes.
Every goddamn – so it was so funny because I was like, ah, they're probably not going to have it. And we walk in. There it is, bottom drawer, you know, bottom thing. We got thing of it. We mix some up. We were talking about the difference between, you know, a lot of people etch straight and ferric, but they don't realize that the ferric makes the depth, and then the coffee etch is a food safe way to make the color change. So we did some of that, and we were kind of talking about different techniques and stuff like that. And I was helping his guys, and it was really, really exciting because I get rejuvenated by being around other people that, you know, I don't know them, and I'm at their shop and I'm trying to be helpful too. And, it was really, really great. So the first class went really well, and then my wife and daughter arrived, and we went to the beach. We went to this small town. It was an hour away by train, and then we walked to our hotel, and then we walked to the beach, and we camped on the beach for 3 days.
Camping?
We were not camping. We got a hotel, and then we would every morning we would walk down. We would set up. We'd show up at the beach at 10. We'd rent the chairs, rent the umbrella, and we would lay down on the beach all day. We just stayed on the goddamn beach.
Wow,
it was amazing. So we did 2.5 days of just being on the beach, and it was perfect. And it was we swam in the Mediterranean, and all these girls with the toplessness, which I was not unhappy about. It was unbelievable. Some of it was unbelievable. Some of it was horrendous. Some of it was horrendous, and some of it was fantastic. And I don't know. I was saying to my wife, I was just like, why do these women? Do they like to have the thong right up their asshole? I said, does that can't be comfortable? And she's like, what are you talking about? I'm like, ah, it's going to tear the old asshole up, right? I mean, everyone's got their fucking
it's not
their
attached.
I mean, they got their G-string right up the crack, and I'm thinking, this isn't rubbed, isn't like it's on. Got to be uncomfortable. And she's like, I don't know. She's like, Jeff, why do you ask me these questions? I'm like, well, I mean, you got me on the beach for 3 days. I'm going to say something weird, but that was funny. And then we got beautiful food on the beach, and we're drinking on the beach, and we're having all these cocktails on the beach. It was fantastic. Beautiful food, and then we went back, and then the girls left, and then I did the second class, and we had the second class, more knife talk guys, more Americans came, and it was awesome. And Rupert and Max and I'm trying to think of there was Eric and Alexander and we had a pile and Paul, we had a pile of knife talk guys, which was awesome, and they were great. And one of the things that was interesting was, you know, it's the idea of like, you know, we talk on this podcast, people ask us about how you kind of move forward. And what's interesting is, it's like, there was one guy, my buddy Nico, he's a good kid, but he was asking us a million questions. And you could tell that he's a young guy, very talented. He's going to be studying at Hereford College, which is an unbelievable blacksmithing school in the UK. And God bless him, Nico's my guy. And he, you know, he was asking a lot of very specific questions. And it was interesting because we were trying to like say, you know, look, there's no specific answers. And a lot of it is, you know, we say it once, we say it a million times, experience is underrated. And making failures is the best thing you can do in order to kind of get better. And what was interesting was, and I think that just being there and being involved with Tomer and being involved with their business and kind of staying with them and talking with them, I took a lot away. And one of the things that I took a lot away was, you know, we would go to, at night, we'd go to restaurants, and then some of the chefs had been in the class before, so I knew some of the chefs, and he was just in a city surrounded by very creative people.
Sure.
And I realized that that's something that I'm going to need to do in order to really kind of move forward, which is the idea that, you know, it's can't just do everything on social media. You have to kind of create connections. And part of those connections and just are long-term connections. Just having a collaboration with someone or you're meeting someone and just doing something for the sake of doing something is good. But creating these sincere relationships with other creative people is so important. You know what
for
I mean?
For sure. I mean, I see people like Don Nguyen does that down in Tucson. Like, he's very connected with the culinary community there.
Right.
My buddy Rich Patterson over in Minneapolis. There's a really cool, like, developing, well, I don't know if it's developing, but I mean, it was already kind of established and continuing to grow a culinary scene there. And my buddy Rich Patterson's like the only, like, high performance custom chef's knife maker in that part of in that city. It's like you have a captive audience and you have a way to connect with that audience through your work and through their food and developing the community. And like he could have a highly successful career just selling to chefs and cooks and home cooks in the Minneapolis area, Minneapolis, St. Paul area alone. But to have that connection with a community like that, I think it's really strong. I see that, like how Fingal's connected with his community there in Ireland, and around Europe and guys like Rich and guys like Don. And I'm like, I wish I could do that with Seattle, but I think I'm just too far removed to kind of like be part of Seattle or Portland's right. Like too big. And to try to do that in Portland would be so challenging. And there's already a lot of guys down, you know, there's a lot of great guys down there already doing stuff in Portland. And so to find a place where you could do that would be fucking rad.
But the thing is we have this, and I think a lot of it is, you know, directed at this podcast, is we're trying to create these solutions and we make it seem like it's so simple. The real relationships that you create with other creative people shouldn't be thinking, I hope this pays off. They should be sincere relationships that down the line something happens. But at the same time, sure. I feel as though, especially with the way Instagram is going and the way people are really kind of like putting all their eggs in the basket of success with social media, we're having this like, we're not having relationships for the sake of having relationships. We're not having relationships for the sake of having really good relationships with creative people. We're seeing them with the focal point of hopefully this turns into something.
It's transactional.
Yeah, that's the problem. And one with Tomer, you know, we go into these restaurants. We know these guys. Like, I know of two restaurants. I know the chefs, you know, because we've been going there for a while and they give me a hug and we have these nice laughs and he sends us some food and we talk about things. And, you know, I think that that's my biggest problem right here is I'm stifled by the fact that I know the chefs, the cooks around here. I mean, they're good dudes and stuff like that. But
right.
It's like I most likely at some point I need to really address the fact that I need to get out of this town that I'm in, and then I need to get a little bit more, have a satellite shop or figure something out. But I mean, that was one of the big takeaways. The other thing was at the end of the classes, so the second day of the classes, you finish your handle, and then the people in the class would go to see Inori. Inori has this beautiful room with areas for sharpening knives and little tubs and then the stones, and he gives a very, very simple and elegant explanation on sharpening.
Oh, nice.
And it's simple, it's easy to understand, it's very, very... It's very, very simple to follow, easy to understand, and people are fucking making razor blades. I mean, they're like people who've never used stones before are becoming successful.
Nice.
And it was really cool because I talked to him for a little bit on the day before my flight. And we were talking about knives, and I said, you know, one of the things I don't do, because he was looking at my knives and stuff like that, I said, and you know, he's Japanese, so I also didn't want to like pretend like I was like, you know, I was like Ninja Man. I said to him, I'm like, I just want you to know that when I make my knives, I don't name them after Japanese names. And he starts put a little smile on his face. And I said, I'll tell you why. Because I don't really have a connection with Japan. And I don't even understand. And I said, and the funny thing is, all these custom knife makers, they're saying these words and they just don't understand what they mean. So I said to him, give me an, I said, what is a Nikiri for? And he puts his finger up and he says, I'm glad you asked. He gets over to his whiteboard and he wipes the whiteboard and he draws this map of Japan. And he goes, back in the day, and I might get this wrong. Don't correct me. I'm gonna give you the big notes.
Yep.
Back in the day, the original capital of Japan was Kyoto. Now it's Tokyo, and there's different styles of cooking from different places. And one of the places they like the yasuba, which has got like a cleaver, and it's got a very sharp, it's got a flat edge. And then there's another place towards Tokyo that likes what we refer to as the nikiri, and that's more like the vegetable chopper. But the difference between the yasuba and the nikiri is the yasuba's got the straight edge, and it's really just for peeling and cutting long, wide ribbons of this particular radish. And he says, when you hear people's using the nikiris, and you hear they're saying the nikiri, and they don't understand that it's a technique. Like some places in Japan, they do a chopping motion. In some places, they do a rolling motion. All these different names have different meanings based on the places that they are in regards to the style of cooking that they do. And I put my hands up and I was like, I am so glad that I fucking don't use any of these goddamn words because I have no idea about any of this stuff. And it was really interesting because you see these knife guys and they're saying, oh, I got this nikiri here and I got this nikiri. And they don't know what the fuck, the reason why a nikiri is a nikiri, you know?
Sure.
And it was interesting because the concept of cultural appropriation, I feel, is fascinating. And I go out of my way to just say, if I don't know something, I don't know it, and that's okay by me. I'll learn about it, but I don't want to pretend like I know everything about all this stuff. So I got a real good understanding about, you know, knife names and knife shapes and the reasons why they use these knives and what's the different cooking styles of the different areas of Japan. It was really cool.
I gotcha.
You know?
Yeah.
So that was good. And then the stone sharpening was fun. I picked up a couple of things that I did not know, and I really, really appreciated that. So Inori's my guy. I don't do a lot of stone sharpening, but I got a new system down with him that I really, really like, and it was very cool. Everybody got to use it, and one of the things that everybody realized at the end was they said I'd never done stone sharpening, and I was very intimidated, and Inori made it very, very easy to understand, and everybody was making thin slices of tomato, you know?
Sick. So that's great.
So with that said, guys, speaking of thin slices of tomato, we got to thank my friends over at Maritime Knife Supply. It's the one-stop shop for knife makers. Get your steel belts, braces, handle material, and all that stuff. You're going to get that, anything you need or think you're going to need. You go to MaritimeKnifeSupply.com, get yourself that 10-pack of abrasives, and you're going to get belts, and you're going to get 10% off. So definitely check out all of that over at Maritime Knife Supply. And while we're here, let's talk about a little Broadbeck Ironworks. Broadbeck Ironworks, makers of the 2x72 grinder. This is a grinder for knife makers, metal workers. You are moving material. This is the machine for you. Definitely check out what they got going on over at Broadbeck Ironworks and put in the promo code KNIFETALK10 for 10% off everything, all the different attachments. You can do whatever you want. Get yourself that 10% off. And thanks to our friends over at Broadbeck Ironworks, and they are taking pre-orders for their new power hammer. So definitely check out what's going on with that. And that's it. So let's just fuck around a little. I mean, we've been fucking around already. So, I mean, you know. But, I guess for me, I came back. When you got back, yeah. You know, you jet lagged. Did you feel rejuvenated? Did you feel excited? What was it back to the show?
Yeah, so jet lag is always a thing for me. And actually, I've had the worst experience actually going from west to east rather than east to west. But going east was actually all right because basically I got almost no sleep. and so when it was time to go to bed in Ireland, I was fucking ready to go to sleep. And then I was just like right on track. And then the same thing kind of happened as well on the way back from from Italy, back to Seattle. I got terrible sleep. And so when I got back, I zonked the fuck out. But I then turned around and woke up at like 4 o'clock in the morning. So I'd definitely gotten used to the time zones over there. But I'm on day, I got back on Sunday. You said you got back on Monday. I got back since Sunday. I got a day more than you getting back. And, I think I'm back on track. This morning I got up at kind of like my regular 6 o'clock in the morning time and it felt good. So I'm good
bowel
with that.
Bowel movements are okay.
Yeah.
Doing you know great. What I'm talking about. They're not great for me. They're not great.
Oh, really?
Ah, oh, dude, I go to Europe and all of a sudden it's like my guts know when I'm over the Atlantic. Shit changes. They like switch to millimeters. I don't know what the fuck goes on. So I get on that airplane, I'm over the Atlantic and my guts just start changing and they don't change back until you know, a couple days back from
in a good way or a bad way? I'm not quite clear
about that. Not in a great
way.
I mean, not in a great way. I mean, I didn't have like, you know, I wasn't like I didn't have explosive diarrhea, but I was a little locked up, you know what I mean? And at the same time we're eating more meat than I normally would in general.
Sure.
I will admit to the fact, this is an embarrassing story, but I'm going to tell it anyway. I had a great time, and I was using the executive bathroom on the second floor at Florentine Kitchen Eyes, and one of his interns walked in on me.
Oh,
and,
sweet.
And she had her earbuds in. I said, I'm here. She hoped that door's opening. That door's opening. I'm like, I'm in here. I'm here. Oh, so sorry. And I was like, all right, well, there you go. That's it.
That's me taking a shit.
I mean, you know what? What can you do? I mean, it was like, I'm like, that was awkward. And then she warns John, says, sorry about that. And I was just like, yeah, me too. You know, fine. But I mean, you know, not my highest moment. But we watched so much soccer. We watched a ton of soccer.
Yeah.
And that was really cool. We saw the England played and they won against, trying to think who they won. Slovakia? I don't know who it was, but they won. I'd never seen penalty kicks. They won on penalty kicks. I think it was Portugal. I'm not 100% sure, but we watched a pile of soccer.
Okay.
And that was a lot of fun. And what was the best thing? Give me five of the best things you ate. Pile of things.
In Ireland, I drank a lot of Irish stouts. And
how was it?
I loved them. And I used to not have a lot of love for them because I come from the Pacific Northwest. There's a lot of really big beers over here, both in body and alcohol content. And what's nice about the Irish beers, the Irish stouts, is they're a lighter body. They're dark as fuck, but they're a lighter body. They're lower alcohol content. And I was like, you know what? I'm okay with this. I can drink four or five of these, and I'm not going to be off my fucking ass.
Oh, boy.
Where if I drink three IPAs from the Pacific Northwest,
done.
I'm close to being on my lips. And I can wake up the next day just fine. I will say in Ireland, there's this incredible music venue that Fingal took us to. It's a very kind of a local, kind of legendary kind of place. A lot of really fucking big names have gone through and performed there, like Jimi Hendrix and Nick Cave and just all these wild performers, like very well-known performers. And the deal is that I think it's the son that runs it now, but the dad who started the place called Connolly's, the dad had a really good sound system. He actually, like, they build their own speakers for their sound system. And they would also take recordings from these live performances and they would give the fucking recording to the band for free.
Wow.
And so I don't know if the band still got like part of the sale, probably not part of the beer sales, but maybe some of the admission costs or something like that. So the band's getting paid and they're getting this free music, that they can have ownership and control of.
Huh.
That was like a big thing that helped to draw people to that part of Ireland. Musical acts, and we saw this oh shit, I can't remember the name of the band anymore, but they were kind of like an Irish band, and not necessarily like completely traditional, but they had a really cool sound. And we really enjoyed it a lot. And we sat up in the balcony, but the son who's part of the family business, he has a Neapolitan style pizzeria that he operates out of there. And he's got a pizza called the Gabin, and it has like the Gabin salami and chorizo on it. And it was fucking crazy. It was so good. But the pizzas were really, really actually fucking awesomely good there. I did also have pizza in Italy. It was also very good.
Not actually as a few good, times. Right?
And I don't know.
Pizza in Italy was overrated.
It was very well done, both places.
You don't think it was overrated?
Yeah, Italy? I think. No, I don't think. I mean, at least the place we got our pizza from was not overrated. Okay. It was good. It was very good. It was probably one of the better pizzas I've had.
Because you're a pizza man.
In my life. I'm a pizza man. I'm the pizza man.
Speaking of pizza man, Tomer has this giant pizza oven, and they cooked all the food in the pizza oven, not pizzas. And now I think I might have to get a goddamn pizza oven. He didn't cook any pizzas in it. He cooked all the food in it for the event.
Yeah, dude. If you treat it like a hearth oven, it's pretty fucking versatile.
Yeah, that changed my mind about the whole situation. So now I'm just like, I don't know.
You got to take a look at those Gosneys. That's probably the move for you.
All right. I'm looking. I just thought, I'm not going to be making just about this thing just for pizzas. We're shoving everything in this fucking
thing.
No, dude,
you could do the fucking Oysters Rockefeller.
Yeah,
you could do all kinds of shit.
If you want to turn the oven on in the house, you turn the oven on up there. I get it.
Exactly.
I never really realized that. So what else?
You could do.
Go ahead.
Oh, go ahead. I was just gonna say you could do smash burgers on skillet that you can slide in and out. You could do all kinds of shit.
No. I've changed my opinion on the whole situation.
Yeah, hearth ovens are pretty rad.
So you didn't have anything special that you had the blood pudding, you like that? Anything special that you had the spaghetti?
I don't know. Like the olive oil
was
really like an eye opener. The espresso. I had an espresso and pizza the first morning. It was simple. It was just an espresso. Espresso longo, which is just like what here would be a normal espresso shot. But when you order espresso in Italy, it's like only the first half of what would be considered a shot of espresso here in the States. And so espresso longo means just like a full espresso shot. But anyways, it was fucking delicious. I was like, holy shit. This is definitely different.
You just like
I've drank a lot of coffee.
Oh man, were you like jacked up to the neck up?
No. I wasn't. I wasn't. It was, but the quality, like the flavor of it was. I don't know what they did to it, but it was very good. The gelato was awesome. I actually am having a hard time. The meals I remember the most are the ones where. We cooked at either Oliver's house or Fingal's house. And so Fingal made these awesome crepes for breakfast a few mornings. We had awesome, like always really great dinners. I had arancinis for the first time, which if people are not familiar with, arancini is essentially like rice rolled up with some cheese sometimes, or just the rice, depending on what you got going on. And then it's like, put into a egg wash and then a flour dredge and maybe the egg wash again and then maybe some panko or some breadcrumbs and then it's fried and it's fucking awesome. And Fingal made some for us that were pretty amazing. It's hard to complain about there was nothing to complain about regarding the food at Fingal's. Their markets, actually going to the market in Italy, the various markets where Gabin sells their cheeses. We went to a few of those, the Skibbereen market maybe 20 minutes down the road, 30 minutes down the road from Fingal's was super cool. A lot of very talented, artisans and food, like food stalls, as well as just like produce purveyors. And we got like some really fresh fish and we did, I think it was sole, and Fingal had me like, skin and fillet a sole. So that was cool to do. He did one and then I did the rest of them, and it was super fun. And the food in Italy, like hanging around at Oliver's and just having just very, very clean, like I said, very clean, very fresh, simple ingredients, and just like being able to sit there and really appreciate just the fucking absolute freshness of the stuff was a unique experience, because like you said, you know, we're not necessarily providing or growing all of our own food or have connections with people who are baking the bread, who are, you know, raising the pigs where the porchetta is coming from or whatever, you know, you're cooking or eating. And so having that experience, eating super fresh foods like that was pretty cool. Definitely something I won't be forgetting anytime soon. And I feel like I've already kind of have incorporated into my repertoire or at least my way of thinking about food when I'm preparing food now.
So that's a big takeaway.
Yeah.
So what else is going on in the, you're back. What are you working on now?
Yeah. I'm just trying to get back into the knife making flow. Like you were saying about, you know, talking with Tomer about business, especially in Ireland. It was really cool with, you know, Fingal and how he does his, you know, he has his custom stuff, but he also has some production style work that he does as well. The Blend and Forge guys, of course, have their production work. Talking to Tobias Hengler about his steel production stuff and how he manages himself and his business. And, you know, everybody talking about some of the issues with Instagram and trying to figure out how to work around it and all that stuff. And so there's a lot of really great conversations. So getting back into the shop here now, I'm just like, I've been on the road for 3 weeks. I've done a little bit of work, but I'm really kind of hankering to get back at it. So I have a piece that I'll hopefully be finishing up early this week, as this podcast comes out on Monday. So hopefully it'll be done on Monday, Tuesday. It's going to be a fun piece. It's just a simple K-tip keto, and it's got an ironwood handle, and it's got a handle style that I do that's kind of a blend between a hexagonal cross section and an octagonal cross section. I have another couple knives that I started spa daying before I left, but I didn't get finished before I left. Thankfully, the guy's got plenty of other knives. He's cool with the delay from being gone on the trip. And I got another project, that Loveless. I'm still fighting that Loveless a little bit. I have some decarb that I got to get through before that Loveless is done. Because when I did the heat treat of it, I heat treated with, I guess you would say maybe not enough kind of margin of error, not enough extra material on it. So that when you are grinding through, you're getting below that decarb. I primary ground it too close to what the finished dimensions were going to be. And so the decarb was an issue, that I still got to work through. But I have some upcoming projects that I'm excited about. I have Maker Camp coming up in October, of course. I'm excited to be, I was talking to Austin and got that nailed down. I'm going to be in Minneapolis actually next month, doing a hammer in at the Midwest Knife Makers Guild, down in Mankato, where Little Giant power hammers were manufactured.
That'll be fun.
Which will be kind of fun. I don't know if they have like a museum or something down there. I would love to see a bunch of mechanical hammers.
Too much. I think Little Giant's out. I don't think. I bet there's not.
No, I know, but I just like, I feel like there's got to be something around there.
I think you're better off going to Paisley Park. Yeah.
Paisley Park, yeah, I might do that too. And that's it for the year. So it's just really like trying to stay cool. We've had a heat wave, I think 2 days ago was just over 100 degrees.
Oh, geez, 100 degrees
in Washington.
We're in the upper 90s. It's bad over here.
Yeah, we're in the 80s for the rest of this week, upper 80s the rest of this week. But yeah, a couple days ago, like when we got back, it was like 97 degrees. We got back on Sunday, was 97. Monday was 99. Tuesday was 87.
It's all right.
Well, sorry, not 99, but just over 100.
You don't need to, no one's fact-checking.
It was fucking hot. And so thankfully we got rivers to go swim in and hang out. I think the next time we go down the river, we'll probably do some crawfishing. Because you can just kind of pluck those little mud bugs out of the river and get a little nice appetizer. I'm trying to use cook outside as much as I can because it's just so goddamn hot and we don't have AC in our house. So we do the whole open up all the windows early in the morning kind of situation.
Well,
what about you?
I had a lot of stuff to do as soon as I got back. I'm finishing off some friction folders that are going out, hopefully when this comes out in a day or so. And then, you know, the funny thing is every time before I go see Tomer, he always asks, I said, if you want me to make anything, let me know. So I made him sanding paddles for hand sanding and stuff like that. But he asked me for, years ago, I made him sanding sticks and stuff like that. So this year he said, I need some more of the push sticks you make. So I make a specific hand push stick where there's like a, it's not straight. So when you hold it, you're actually, when you're holding in your hand, you're the part that holds your knife against the belt is at an angle. So your hand is in an ergonomic position. So your thumb is pushing against the flat of the push stick, and you're in a very comfortable position to use a push stick when you're pulling the knife and grinding your blade. So I started doing that a while ago, okay. And then he said to me, you think you could make me a couple more of those? And I thought to myself, why don't I just make a pile of them and put them on the website? So we made a pile of Ipe, my version. We had a pile of Ipe from a sure. construction project scraps.
Right.
So we made 20 Ipe knife push stick, ergonomic fader knives, push sticks that we're going to put on the website hopefully by the time this comes out. So if you're a knife maker and you want to get a push stick, and I'm putting this out there right now. To all you motherfuckers with your CNC and your 3D printer and your refer to yourself as an entrepreneur, my eyes are wide open. You pick this motherfucker up and you start to make your own version of this because it's different than what you normally see, and you start to get creative. I'm taking notes, and I am not going to be quiet about it. So this is your last warning. For all the entrepreneurs,
I think
you fucking thieves, you're going to grab one of them things. I'm going to keep them cheap. They're going to be shipped to you. There's a warning. You will pay. You will pay for theft. And paying for theft will be vicious here. I'll be vicious here to you directly. Direct.
Tongue lashing.
We don't have to do DMs. We don't have to apologize. We don't have to. Don't send me. I was inspired by. Is this okay? You will be cut off at the knees. The guillotine's coming down. I'm not playing. So you've been warned. So that's that. You know, a little bit of, you know, you gotta let people know how it is. And if you really want to let people know how it is, you can use that Damasteel. Guys, the Damasteel build along is coming up. I think there's some more steel at maritimeknifesupply.com if you want to join us for the Damasteel Knife Talk build along. And if you go to damasteel.ab, no, not my mistake, you go to damasteel.se, you put in the promo code KnifeTalk10, you're going to get 10% off everything at Damasteel. And go follow Carly and all them over at DamasteelAB on Instagram. But with that said, I'm fired up to be back. I'm just getting over the jet lag. I'm getting ready to do a few other things. And we're doing some new collaborations with the new chefs. And we're going to have these these ergonomic push sticks will be up on the website at faderknives.com. So first come, first serve. I'm with you. And that's it. I think we've done it all, don't you think?
Very nice.
Guys, this is the summer sessions. Summer sessions means, you know, sometimes I'll be here, sometimes one of us will be here, except for last week. Craig canceled at the last minute, and that's fine. I'm with you. We needed a break. He's having a good time. We're having a good time. And if you want to interact with the show, go to Knife Talk Podcast on Instagram, where you can send us your questions, your tool regrets, bid ideas, listener feedback, whatever you want. We want to appreciate the hell out of you. Knife Talk Summer Sessions are in session, and we will see you next week. Mareko, good to have you back. All right, guys. See you later.
Yeah, buddy.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on all your back-to-school needs, all in the Kroger app. Get 3 for $10 on select Kellogg's Giant Size cereal with your card. Then get tender USDA Choice Boneless Beef Chuck Roast for $4.99 a pound with your card and a digital coupon.
Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.